Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
Is it a life skill to do what you promise to do? That might be the recurring theme this morning here on The Morning Meeting. Sean Seacrease, Quaid alongside you. Aaron Baker from Axiom Strategies back with us on the show this morning. We'll get to all things Missouri as we are getting oh so close to the Missouri primary, Quaid.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to talk with Aaron. He had a specific request on social media today of the other three gubernatorial candidates, aside from Eric Greitens.
Oh, so that kind of request.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what it was he was actually fishing for, because I don't think the request that he put out, well, maybe the request he put out there on social media for Catherine Hanaway, John Bruner, and Peter Kinder actually is a legitimate request, and he's not just being cheeky.
I thought that he was going to follow up something we had talked about when I told him no. I said, I only eat local honey now. I no longer wrestle in it. I had to retire from that.
Really?
So he had asked
all that
me
wrestling
that.
And local honey didn't immune you from certain things. Now you have to consume it too?
Well, actually, because I do suffer from allergies, only in the real heavy spring season. Mm. But eating local honey to where your allergies are bothering you, so produced in this area, actually helps fight through that.
Sure.
So that's why I got on that kick, and it's delicious.
But the wrestling didn't, your body absorbing it through the wrestling in it in kiddie pools didn't do the same.
You would
thing?
Think so, yeah. But it just didn't work out.
I do think so. Why wouldn't that be the
same? I'm never afraid to experiment, but that one just didn't prove the hypothesis. So with the scientific mind, you have to move on and look for other avenues.
Oh, bother.
Coming up this morning on the Morning Meeting, a judge has weighed in on an Illinois issue you will not now be seeing on the November ballot.
Yes, this is troubling.
Yes, we'll get there. And when do you go too far to be included as a delegate for your state at the RNC convention? All that coming up this morning here on the Morning Meeting. We want to start, though, with last night in Cleveland. I thought there were a couple of fantastic speeches given. The other half of an unrequited bromance of mine hit the stage and was absolutely on the mark. Newt.
Oh, boy, Newt, and we were texting a little bit about various different things last night. You're jumping ahead, though. Because
No. It's you can never get ahead of yourself if you want more Newt. Remember, when he ran in the last cycle, I was waving the moon base, sign after he had the big come out with that debate. It was in Florida at that time. We were talking about advanced moon bases and how you get the country back working again and doing all these things. Last night, I texted you, new cabinet-level position, national speechifier.
Yeah.
Newt's in.
Yeah. The thing that my wife said when Newt came on, and Newt, off the cuff, started connecting the dots.
Oh, and it was a masterclass.
Newt was really the guy at that point in time who was efforting to be the unifier. Started essentially telling everybody on the convention floor, look, Ted Cruz did this. He just didn't use the words. And the this is in endorsement. He just didn't use the words that you were expecting or wanted or demanded in some cases. And my wife at that point in time said, Newt is saving Ted Cruz right now. And that's what I texted you. And then you got all rolling hard on Newt and started talking about a new cabinet position about speechifying.
Mm-hmm. And the same language in the post speech breakdown was used by a panel member from the exact text that I sent you, and that was clean up aisle 9. And when he said that, I lost it. I almost my adult beverage almost came through my nose last night.
When, how do when they he know said the, that. That person?
That's you know, we've always made the joke
and
that
how
we're
does
collected
that person connect
to the universal unconscious.
To Newt.
6 degrees of Kevin Bacon right there is what's in play. But what started this controversy? Josh, MM23 is going to get us started this morning. This is the last 30 seconds or so of the speech from Ted Cruz. He's wrapping up. You can tell he went for like 20 or 23 minutes, and you can tell people are winding it up. They're giving you those cues. People are ready. He's going to end it with the endorsements. Hit it.
We will unite the party. We will unite the country by standing together for shared values, by standing for liberty. God bless each and every one of you, and God bless the United States of America.
You can hear that audience got sour real quick when they realized he wasn't going to come out and overtly support Donald Trump, that he reneged on the campaign pledge to support whoever won that, that he wasn't a man of his word. This is a man who talked, and this is where I'm at on this. I like Cruz for a bunch of different reasons, but you can't talk about being the conscience of a party when you yourself backtrack on a promise that you gave.
I totally get.
Now you're a hypocrite.
I totally get what you're saying. I think he was in a no-win position last night. I think everybody comparing him to Reagan and was he going to do what Reagan did in 76? I think we're really going back and kind of redrawing the lines on what Reagan did in 1976 to fit our own needs right now and to push Ted Cruz into a place that none of us would want to be in. I think what Ted could he have worded things in a little different way? Sure. But I think the people on that floor last night weren't going to accept what Ted had to say unless he said the words, I endorse Donald Trump. If he didn't say those four words in that order, they weren't going to be happy.
Okay, that's people who I think had the knives out.
Those were the people booing him as he left the stage.
Right.
They weren't going to be happy.
Those were the people harassing his wife as she left the convention, which is
the
over
hordes.
The line. Yeah, which is over the line. I just wanted some recognition of, and this is what I was expecting him to do, was to say, your choice is Hillary or not Hillary.
He could have said that.
Just something along those lines.
But that's not an endorsement.
No, it's not. It's not, but at least you're coming out and trying to say we're trying to unify and move against
and
liberal intrusion.
What you're saying is essentially what Newt said.
Mm-hmm.
Following that up,
which Newt was masterful, saying thanking Ted for his endorsement of Trump.
Now,
essentially, when he opened his speech by saying he said to vote for someone who will defend the Constitution
mm-hmm.
and has a social conscience, and we know from the actions of the past 12 months that disqualifies Hillary Clinton. So, Ted, thank you for your endorsement of Donald Trump. I thought that was an absolute masterwork.
And yeah, and that was, and at the time, you're like, well, if people didn't see Ted's speech, Newt's just throwing this off the cuff. Apparently, Newt did see.
Yeah, he Ted's did come speech. Out and say that later, that he got to see the text about 2 hours before he went on so that he could prepare some follow-up remarks.
Yeah, what Ted had said right before we picked it up with the audio was, we deserve, and this is when I knew he wasn't going to go there, we deserve leaders who stand for principle, who unite us all behind shared values, who cast aside anger for love. That is the standard we should expect from everybody. And to those listening, meaning he wasn't just speaking to the people in the center, in the convention hall, mm-hmm. on the floor, in the stands. To those listening, please don't stay home in November. And I thought, this is as close
right.
as we're going to get. He finished up by finishing a little later. Stand and speak and vote your consciences. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust and defend our freedom and be faithful to the Constitution. I at that time I turned my wife. I go, this is as close as it's going to get.
If the first two nights of the convention were about getting the party base fired up, I thought last night was the necessary pivot to talking to people who are either undecided, who are maybe a little squishy on the Democrat side of the aisle, maybe would normally vote Democrat but just can't stomach Hillary and they're not sure if they're going to stay home or come out. I thought that plea from Cruz, right. I thought the speech from Newt and the speech from Mike Pence were very well thought out.
I thought Mike Pence was really good.
And he's being overshadowed by this Cruz brouhaha. Mm-hmm. But this is something that I thought the party had to do at some point. And I thought they did it well last night, which was make the case for Trump, for conservative ideas, to those who aren't dyed-in-the-wool, Mother Jones-subscribing Hillary supporters.
Yeah. And as far as the Reagan thing goes, because there was a whole lot of talk about this before Cruz came on and after
Cruz. Now, when
Cruz
we compared Cruz
left.
To Reagan, were we absolutely sure that he didn't use any words that Ronald Reagan used in that 1976 speech? He didn't use the word the or Americans or country, because that's plagiarism, Quaid.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. But Reagan never said the four words I endorse Gerald Ford. What Reagan said is there's no substitute for winning. That's really not.
Well, you got two football guys there, Ford and Reagan.
An endorsement. And those two guys really never got along.
That's okay, though.
They never got on. They never. Reagan didn't go out and you know, campaign for Gerry Ford. And I'm basing this on Craig Shirley, who's written several books about the Reagans, has essentially come out and said, look, Reagan didn't word for word come out and we give him credit for it,
mm-hmm.
but he did, and I think that's also part of what Newt was trying to connect the dots together. To say, look, he was here, he said these things, because these things, therefore,
mm-hmm.
you know. And as far as Reagan, if Gerry Ford had maligned Nancy Reagan, if Gerry Ford had come up with some crazy fantasy conspiracy about Ronald Reagan's dad and the assassination of John F. Kennedy, would Reagan have even said along the lines of, there's no substitute for winning? I don't think, you know, this is the tough position that mm-hmm. Ted Cruz was put in last night.
Well, now, the Reagans had the advantage because Nancy had consulted the star chart and knew that he wasn't going to say anything.
She was doing that.
Like
maybe
that.
She was.
So, you know, they had that advantage at that point. But tough day for Ted Cruz yesterday. Not only does the campaign or the convention for him kind of wrap up on that note, but while he's giving his outdoor speech yesterday, Trump's jet does the double flyby. Sort of gratuitously giving it the, hey, look who it is. And then he gets on the helicopter and, like, flies by and hovers over it as well. Sort of the omnipresence of Donald Trump yesterday. I don't think that he was rubbing it in, but no, I couldn't help but to notice sort of the symbology.
You think from the window of Trump Force One, he's looking out and going, I think I see Ted down there.
Hey,
let's buzz
circle,
the tower.
Circle back.
I don't think that that's...
Negative. Man. Ghost Rider.
Doesn't have his binoculars out going, I think that's him. That's what's going on. Did you want to pull up the audio from Ted this morning for the follow-up situation, or do you want to wait till after the break?
No, let's do that.
Okay,
I think Josh, when we say this, MM24.
Yeah.
While you're pulling that up, the one thing that I have started to notice with Ted, and this was evident when he was still campaigning hard while we were doing debates and so forth, and then the machinations after Trump had won the appropriate number of delegates to win the nomination, and then everything sort of leading up to it, his appetite of ambition is crazy. I mean, I think it obscures his view of reality. He to me is becoming the man who would nuke all of his competitors just to be king of the burn cinder. What occurred to me is that the Mayans would have a legend about him that, like, he was so thirsty he drank the entire river, and then, you know, to the detriment of everyone else, just so he could consume, you know, his own ambition. So I wonder, with that sort of raw, unchecked, unfettered appetite, whether or not he'll be able to handle it, or whether it might be his undoing, so to speak. I know that sounded very Star Wars cryptic there, but I don't know. This is a guy that he strikes me as someone who would go to any lengths to sort of achieve what he wants to achieve.
So you're saying that as far as Senator Cruz goes, the ends justify the means?
I think there's a little bit of that there. The other, and this is a super comic book nerd reference, so quadruple points if you get it. If we were assigning roles for Watchmen, he's Ozymandias.
I think if that were the case, he could have gone a lot more scorched earth last night. If that were the case, he could have taken a flamethrower to that crowd.
Yeah, but that doesn't...
Especially when they surrounded his wife. If it was all about him, yep, he could have just laid waste to everybody, because it's not like he doesn't have the, you know, attributes to start dissecting
different delegations and individuals and
people and media in the room.
But if he does that, it's an albatross around him for his next run in 2020.
A lot of people think that it was anyway. And for people who say that, you should be happy today because you didn't like him in the first place. You should be rejoicing what he did last night.
And what you said, I think he wanted to do what you said, but he's also wily enough to know that that would be hung around
him. Then that's not drinking the river.
So I didn't say would. I said he could. Okay, let's follow up with his response.
This is people today say, why did you do that? Why did you go back and not, quote-unquote, endorse or support publicly Trump like you said you would? This is Cruz this morning.
When I stood on that debate stage and they asked every candidate there, if you don't win, will you support the nominee? I raised my hand, and I raised my hand enthusiastically with full intention of doing exactly that. And I'll tell you, the day that pledge was abrogated, the day that was abrogated was the day this became personal. And as I said at the time, and I'm not going to get into criticizing or attacking Donald Trump, but I'll just give you this response. I am not in the habit of supporting people who attack my wife and attack my father. And that pledge was not a blanket commitment that if you go and slander and attack Heidi, that I'm going to nonetheless come like a servile puppy dog and say thank you very much for maligning my wife and maligning my father.
Yeah. And so it's exactly what everybody thought last night. I don't know that that sounds like somebody who's very self-serving and only has their ends in mind. I think anybody put in that position would be in a difficult spot.
I agree. That's why I wish that attack hadn't happened, to see what would
be
done. Well, sure. Because that wasn't good politics on any level.
It comes back to the worst of the primary campaign.
LCD, lowest common denominator.
When that moment occurred, and I'm trying to remember the day, was that the day of the Indiana primary? Was that the morning of the Indiana primary that Trump said that his dad was hanging out with Lee Harvey Oswald before the Kennedy assassin? Was that morning?
I remember it happening. I don't remember what day it happened. I don't remember what I had for lunch on Monday.
So, you know, it brings that all back around again, and we discussed it at home last night. If Ted addresses that issue at that point in time on that stage, does it bring everything else down? Does he invoke forgiveness and say, I forgive you, Donald, for the things you said?
That would have been a great moment.
But does that bring everything else down? And if he says that, I think everybody else is now booing him then.
No, I would boo those people who booed him if he says.
You'd boo the booers?
I would boo the booers. It would be a meta
boo.
Would
people be able to tell that you were booing the booers, or would you just come across like a booer too?
Well, my reality is not subject to their perception, so they should know instinctively. But no, if Ted would have taken that higher road, I think he would have come off as golden in the moment, making the impassioned plea that he did and then saying things got heated during the campaign, Donald. Because what was the line that he said? We need to set aside hate for love.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have said, I will follow my own words and set aside animosity for love.
It would have been interesting.
Donald, I forgive you. And that would have been a golden moment. And that would have put him on a rocket ship of goodwill heading forward.
It would have been interesting.
That was a missed opportunity.
We discussed it, and there it was either way. I don't know. We'll never know now. It's an interesting premise that if I could ask Ted Cruz now, I would love to. But I think, you know, he wasn't just talking to the people in the arena. I think he was talking to a much wider audience last night as he looked straight into the camera, not just down on the floor.
Fourth night tonight, the nominee takes the stage in what is expected to be about a 45-minute to an hour speech tonight. Mm-hmm. So that'll be very interesting. Lots of stuff to talk about with Craig Robinson when we get to visit with him tomorrow.
Will Donald take the opportunity to take the higher road and apologize for going there with Ted and elevate himself to tonight?
I don't know. I thought that Trump's tweet after Cruz's speech was very interesting when he said, saw Ted's speech ahead of time, knew what he was going to say. He said something to the effect of, the stage is big enough for all of us, or the convention's big enough for everybody. That's that's okay. And I thought that was him starting to take the higher road there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'll be interesting. All right, coming up next, what you won't be seeing on the Illinois ballot come this November, and Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, coming up in just about 11 minutes here on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Mark Levin, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Just got done texting with Aaron Baker. He is going to be with us in the next segment. He is not at the Rabbit Barn at the county fair where he was stuck last week.
Well, the Rabbit Barn shouldn't be open anymore. I mean, the county fair's over there, right?
Yeah, well, that's why he's not stuck there.
Okay.
A judge has ruled that a voter referendum looking to change the way the land of Lincoln draws its political boundaries is unconstitutional and will not be on the November ballot in Illinois. That's the second time, Quaid, that this has been blocked in the courts. Both of those instances saw a lawsuit brought by an attorney linked to the Mike Madigan leadership circle, and they pressed that that doesn't meet constitutional muster there. So instead of you getting to elect your representatives will continue selecting you.
We put a post up on the Morning Meeting Facebook page from Illinois Policy about the judge blocking the redistricting plan for the November ballot. I don't think you can. You have to continue this struggle on behalf of the voters. Illinois Policy's comment, though, with this story is Madigan wins again.
You've got the ultimate chance to win this November when you go to the poll. Maybe not on this issue, but on several issues that are more than tangentially related to this issue coming forward. Mm-hmm. All right, keep that in mind when you go to the poll. Coming up, Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategy. We get into all things Missouri next on The Morning Meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
WTAD.
It's the Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, getting all squared away as we get set to take a headfirst dive like a Scrooge McDuck into his vault of gold into Missouri politics.
Well, was that
only works in a cartoon? Wait,
wait, say which cartoon was that? Was it DuckTales?
I don't remember which
Josh
one.
Is nodding.
A,
yes,
this is a,
yeah.
This is an overarching. This is a recursive Scrooge McDuck theme as you go back through that history.
Scrooge McDuck.
No matter what party you're affiliated with, there is one convention you won't want to miss coming up this weekend. This is actually pretty cool. Springfield, Illinois is having the Downtown Bacon Throwdown starting tomorrow.
Ooh.
Yeah, this is pretty. It is a, quote, celebration of bacon. It begins tomorrow at 5, runs till midnight. They're going again Saturday, 3 till midnight. So no matter which convention you would prefer to go to politically, I think the one thing that will unite this country again and make us whole is our unbound love of bacon.
And if you're looking for pork in this state, stop one is Springfield.
That's, I think it works on so many levels. A guy who I'm absolutely sure loves bacon, or else we may just throw him off the show. Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, with us this morning. Aaron, what's your favorite way to imbibe your bacon?
You know, I'm just pro bacon. I don't like it. I don't like it super crispy, though. I'm more of the chewy bacon type of guy.
Ooh, so you're the dark side to my light side. Just, I like.
Just
I
to
like
give
it.
You know, we have Bacon Fest in Kirksville, Missouri, too. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to represent the Missouri side, I need to let you know that we celebrate bacon on an annual basis as well.
Well, yes, bacon. Yes, anytime you can get together around bacon, I think most people will. Could we get Ted Cruz and Donald Trump followers together on bacon? Do you think maybe that and Newt Gingrich with a big tray of bacon could make everybody happy?
That's right.
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning on the Morning Meeting. Our chance to jump into all things Missouri. We're going to end up with the GOP gubernatorial race. But I want to start on the Democratic side of the aisle, Aaron. It's been confirmed now that Jason Kander is going to skip the DNC National Convention. We've talked about it before. He's in a different sort of situation in Missouri right now. He's trying to distance himself from the unpopular sort of Obama-Hillary legacy still holding on to that Democrat nomination. How is his sort of tightrope walk going?
You know, I think he's doing a fairly good job of trying to be a conservative. He was against the Iran deal. But again, Jason Kander's biggest problem is going to be, is he a priority for the Democrats nationally? You know, he's probably in the 8, 9, or 10 range on races that Senate Democrats care about. Evan Bayh jumping in actually hurts Kander a lot. So no matter how conservative Kander tries to be, in 2016, despite his past, it's going to be really hard for him to have the funding to keep up with Roy Blunt on being a priority for the Democrats and nationally.
Is there any blowback from Democrats from him not showing up in Philadelphia? Here in Illinois, there was some hubbub about the fact that Governor Bruce Rauner, Senator Mark Kirk wouldn't be in Cleveland. Is there something
similar? I think Kirk's going to Philly.
Democrats in Missouri are pretty forgiving of that. You've got to remember, I mean, Nixon did this. Robin Carnahan didn't want to be seen on stage with Barack Obama when she ran against Roy Blunt. Claire tries to come off as a fiscal conservative. Koster is a former Republican and does quite well in their party. I think they're very forgiving and pretty pragmatic that in Missouri you've got to at least pretend to be a conservative on even-numbered years if you're going to do well in a general election as a Democrat.
Sounds so mercenary when you put it that way, Aaron. You have to at least try to be a conservative in even-numbered years. We're all so bloated with information now. We get everything at the tip of our fingers on our smartphone. You would think that sort of biannual dance toward conservatism would be recognized as an illusion on the part of those that really don't feel that way. Are candidates still able to sort of remake themselves ahead of elections successfully, in your opinion, now that we're so inundated with information?
I guess people are so overwhelmed that their Google doesn't work. I mean, it must be broken, and folks need to have it explained to them how to research things. I was reading a Facebook conversation about Eric Greitens, and someone said, well, he's a globalist, and he believes in climate change. And then some guy who's pretty smart and owns a business said, well, I called his campaign office and they said that he was not for climate change. And it's kind of, you know, you kind of think, well, what is the campaign staff supposed to say this close to the election? No, actually, he's a Republican that believes in a liberal agenda. People really need to research their candidates. I mean, we've got a nominee for the guy for president has switched parties 5 times. The guy leading in Missouri for governor right now seems like he's still a Democrat, but running as a Republican, and folks can't do the research to figure it out. It's amazing to me how much information is out there, but folks just don't believe it, so they don't even try to figure things out on their own anymore. They just go with what they hear.
This explains your post earlier about Hanaway and Kinder and Bruner getting together for a search engine tutorial post. I get it now.
Yeah, I mean, I think all three of those candidates kind of like each other and appreciate each other, and their policy is very similar. And I think they, too, are frustrated that voters think that Greitens is a ideologically conservative, even though he's refused to even take positions on ideology issues this year and is a former Democrat, liberal Democrat. I mean, I, as an adult, have not changed my ideology for quite some time, but he has quite recently. And it's frustrating to watch, and it could easily work out for him in this primary.
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning here on The Morning Meeting. I want to do something a little bit different today. I want to talk about that GOP primary race, but because you've been so adroit at sort of running with our crazy on the show while we've had you on, Aaron, I want to talk about this horse race style. So here we come. We're coming down toward the primary. We come around the final turn. We're in the last furlong.
Down the stretch.
Who's out in front as they come down the stretch here? Who's out in front and by how many lengths?
Okay, so I think that Greitens is in the lead, just in front of everyone else, and I think that Bruner is actually maybe last now. So that's a reversal since we last talked.
Yes, it is.
His negative attacks on Greitens have hurt him a little bit and have taken him off message, and perhaps Bruner's support wasn't as solid as many had thought. Hanaway's message of a safe and strong Missouri, her pro-law enforcement, back to cops type theme with her background, I believe that she's actually the second horse in the race right now. And quite frankly, the news cycle has been kind to her in bringing people back to thinking about Ferguson-type issues, which is the narrative that she's had all along. Peter Kinder has a great ad that's up that says that all the other three candidates are throwing mud at each other. It's a very good ad. Kinder is a known name in Missouri. I think that he and Hanaway are neck to neck. I give her the advantage. You may know that. I mean, that's where I put the horse race right now. Greitens, quite a lead, not a huge lead, but just he's barely in front. He's in front of two horses that are kind of side to side, and Hanaway and Kinder, and I think Bruner's lagging behind.
All right, so a one-length lead for Greitens, but as we all know, yeah. If you know anything about racing, horse racing or track or cross-country or marathoning, that when it comes to the end, most racers have a kick to the finish line. So does anybody have the kick that's going to be able to overtake Greitens, or is Greitens' own kick going to propel him to that finish line? What does it look like right now as they come down this sort of final furlong to the primary?
Well, in the last week, Greitens has received about the largest contribution in Missouri history, almost $2 million from a pack of named after something to do with Navy SEALs. So $2 million is a lot of juice for a guy that's already ahead. We don't know where that money is coming from. Like a lot of his donations, it's probably out of state. I think that gives him a lot of momentum coming into the stretch. Again, Catherine Hanaway has a base of people that we know for sure get out and vote, and her message of her pro-law enforcement message could keep her competitive against that kind of cash disadvantage.
Speaking of money and packs for Eric Greitens, LG Pack, which people just seem to have dropped, has now turned their focus on Catherine Hanaway instead of John Bruner. I think that accentuates what you were saying, that she's the one, right, at least right now, that he's worried about. Are the other three, meaning Kinder, Bruner, and Hanaway, taking away from each other? Like, if there were one less of them, would it be easier to overtake Greitens?
Yeah, that's true. If there were fewer horses in this race, Greitens would have a little bit tougher of a time. Kind of the low information voters are heading towards Greitens, and quite frankly, I have friends that are Greitens supporters that are good people. They're kind of new to politics, and they're looking for something fresh and different. And boy, in a Republican primary, he is just that. But yeah, it would make things a lot less complicated. And if there were fewer people in the race, I do think he'd have a harder time slipping through this. It is interesting to note, you know, you mentioned the LG pack. Greitens' team denied that that was them, but conveniently one ad from LG pack calls Greitens a hero. And I believe now every single person except for Greitens has been targeted by the pack. So obviously we were right all along that the LG pack was dark money supporting Eric Greitens. And it's just interesting to watch someone go negative against candidates who has said that they're not a typical politician and they don't like negative ads. I will say, too, that Greitens himself has an ad, his own campaign, attacking Catherine Hanaway as well. So as they're coming around the bend, I think Greitens realizes that Hanaway is kind of coming around the corner a little bit faster paced than anybody else.
So basically what this all boils down to is an episode of Sesame Street. Which one of these kids is doing his own thing? Which one of these kids is not like the other ones? And you can just kind of use the power of deduction with this dark money, as you said, to realize who they are sort of moving in favor of or trying to move the needle for.
Right. I mean, and some of Greitens' donors are so bad. I mean, the guy that had accused of having a sex slave, et cetera. A lot of politicians have refused donations from him, so perhaps he used this pack to fund Greitens. But it's going to be very tough for any candidate besides Eric Greitens to pull this off with the amount of money he has. But Missouri voters do surprising things, so we'll see what happens.
Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. When we first started this conversation with the primary quite a ways away, there were two competing taxes that were thought to be up that had to do with smoking and raising more money for the state of Missouri. The courts have gotten involved in one of those. One has had its language reviewed to see if it's constitutional. Kind of give us an up-to-the-minute of what's going on those and what voters may see on that primary ballot.
Sure. So both taxes will actually be on the November ballot if they make it through the validation process of all the signatures. I wouldn't necessarily call the two tobacco taxes competing. If they both pass, they'll probably be stacked on top of each other. So they both could pass. The one that's been taking on water for months now is many people refer to it as raise your hand for kids. That is the big tobacco money that's coming in from North Carolina to raise taxes, particularly on little tobacco in the state, which is quite a fascinating story. One court said that on the petitions that folks signed, the ballot language was incorrect. Another court said, a lower court said that the fiscal note was actually incorrect. Many believe that when you sign something, it needs to be accurate and not misleading. And so many thought that candor would say, okay, we need to say these signatures aren't valid because what they signed was not what they thought it was. It was inaccurate. Candor said he's going to go ahead and have all the county clerks validate these signatures. And he intends, if it does get enough valid signatures, to go ahead and put it on the ballot. That could put him in a little bit of a bind in his race with Roy Blunt, that he is doing everything he can to help big tobacco and to help higher taxes in the state. But that's the choice that he has made, which I'm sure was political in nature. I'm not a Democrat. I can't understand it. But the courts, that will bring on another legal battle, and we'll see if that early childhood big tobacco tax increase could go on the ballot. Right now, the Secretary of State plans to put it on the ballot if enough signatures are validated.
Aaron Baker, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. But last thing, Aaron, and I'm going to take it back to last night at the RNC. Ted Cruz in a no-win position last night?
So a lot of people, you know, use Facebook and social media to kind of give their opinion on the day as if they're some sort of political pundit, as if they're, you know, as if they're celebrity enough that their thought on how things go in the world or go in politics actually matters and that people care. I try not to post things on social media that I think that time will be the judge of and not me. And I think that history will be the judge of whether or not Ted Cruz's speech was appropriate and what he did was appropriate. And I think we all need to just relax and let time play out and see what happens. See if Donald Trump is a consistent conservative as a candidate. See how he governs if he is elected president. And see what happens to the party if it's changed forever after this campaign. So That's my thought on Ted Cruz's speech. Again, I think history will be the judge on whether or not it was appropriate.
All right. Aaron Baker, Axiom Strategies, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. Thanks, Aaron. We'll check back in a week as we really start to get down to it in front of the Missouri primaries. Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks. 10 days left. I look forward to it.
When we come back, what do we got, Sean?
We'll wrap it up.
Okay, we'll wrap it up when we come back on The Morning Meeting.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea.
The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Hi, it's Glenn Beck, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
That's generic.
Generic naming convention. It's The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Just a moment left. Sean Seacrest, Quaid alongside you. If you missed any of it this morning, go back, get the podcast. The last five, always at WTAD.com, and you can get the breadth of the show wherever you download your podcast. I am super stoked, even more than usual, to talk to C-Rob tomorrow.
Oh, he was on fire last night on social media. I encourage you.
He may burn out his smartphone and have to get a new one. And that's just ahead of the DNC convention next week. He might go through two.
If you're not following Craig on Twitter, it's at the Iowa GOP-er.
Yep.
It
looks like 50s dad with the big pipe with the hawk, the Iowa hawk coming out of it at the end. It's very unique, and you've got him.
Yeah, follow that, because when
he needs
either
a picture of the vamper,
retweets something, that would be cool, or makes a comment himself, usually there's a conversation that follows, and it's interesting. So we highly encourage that, and we'll tell him that we're encouraging people to follow him online.
Okay, big speech at the convention tonight. Donald Trump, he sets this up. He's looking to pivot toward policy and do some other things. We'll be breaking that down tomorrow, both before and with Craig. We'll get to the actual content of it beforehand, and then we'll talk strategy and going forward, and a little preview of what we expect coming up in Philly as well. That'll all be here tomorrow on The Morning Meeting.
Morning Meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.